This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. You've heard about the global supply chain crisis, from power outages and COVID outbreaks affecting manufacturing abroad to clogged ports on the West Coast and staffing shortages across the country. On Wednesday, President Biden addressed transportation bottlenecks in a meeting with stakeholders, including port operators, labor unions, and top brass from Walmart, UPS, and FedEx. The crisis isn't quite as acute when it comes to Connecticut's ports, with the local Longshoremen's Union telling us all is running smoothly along the eastern and Gulf coasts. But on top of staffing shortages in the state, there are some strong signals of supply chain issues in the local retail industry. There have been reports of backlogs in auto sales, price hikes and food shortages impacting restaurants and school lunches, and a familiar run on toilet paper. Today, Where We Live, we hear from the president of Connecticut's Retail Merchants Association, Tim Phelan. And later, UConn economist Fred Karstensen joins us. First, with the holidays already looming large, the owner of one local toy shop chain says it's a struggle to keep her stores stocked. Joining us on Zoom now is Lori Hirschman, who owns and operates Evans Toy Shop in Hamden, Geordie's in Guilford, and Jessie's in Orange, along with her husband. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a wonderful way to start my day.
We'd love to hear from our listeners as well. What are you noticing when you're out shopping, even going to local restaurants, even those online orders that you put in? You can join us, 888-720-9677, 888-720-WMPR. Share a comment on our Facebook page and find us on Twitter at Where We Live. So, Lori, what have you been seeing over the last several months? When we think about, you know, stores having trouble keeping inventory, has it been getting worse?
It has been getting much worse. It is a challenge to keep the stores filled. And I'm kind of getting excited about the challenge because it's opening my eyes to new ways of getting product and opening my eyes to new products in general. And so it's kind of been a learning experience for me. It's been a struggle to get the product in, but somehow we're getting around it.
So talk about, you know, the old way that you were getting inventory and your relationship with brand representatives or reps and what you've had to do now.
Yes. So in the past, I would be in love with a particular, let's say, puzzle company or a doll company. And my reps over the years and my companies that I do business with would be, you know, very good to me and give me plenty of inventory, and there has never been a problem. Since maybe 6 months ago, when the supply chain was really struggling, it forced me to look at new doll lines, new puzzle lines that are actually really working out. So the companies that I have done business with in the middle of this pandemic have decided to change their warehouses, for instance, or their internet way of doing things. They've changed courses. And so that has added to the struggle of getting product. So I've reached out to other companies with the help of my reps as to who has things in stock, who could ship the fastest, who has the most in their storage facilities. And so I've been lucky to get product that way.
I referenced the backlog on the western part of our country at some of the ports. And so, you know, have there been issues where some of what you're ordering might be stuck on a ship out there? And then, as you mentioned, finding new warehouses and new places to get inventory to your stores.
So my inventory has definitely struggled because they are stuck on those ships. So now when the reps meet with me, we go through the in-stock list of what the companies have in the warehouses, and we only order in-stock things so I know what's coming. So that being said, after we look and weed through all the in-stock things, and then I expect them within a week, and they're still not here in a month, I follow up on all these orders, and what the new issue is they have nobody in their warehouses to pack up my orders. So the inventory of these companies are there, but nobody in the warehouse is packing up these orders to ship them. So not only is it a shipping problem, a port problem, a warehouse problem, it's the personnel problem too. So the inventory is there and nobody's there to pack it up.
I'm glad that you mentioned all these different pressure points because this has been in the news recently, and there's probably a lot of Americans who don't quite understand how the supply chain works.
Right.
You know, in the dialogue that's happening with national media covering this, and now we're talking about just finding what the impact is here in our state. Do you find that people say, well, just buy American? Is it that simple, Lori?
It is actually not that simple. I have really started navigating American companies, and you know what? A lot of them are just not there. And even those American companies, USA made companies, which, you know, there is quite a handful there, but not enough to fill a store. Those people have been affected by staff shortages too. They can't get the stuff out either. They're short of help. It's really, and it's on so many levels that it's mind-boggling how many different levels. The truckers, everything about the supply chain is affected.
Lori, how long have you had your toy shops?
So Jesse's has been around for 32 years. Evans is reaching the 29th year, and then Geordie's we opened up over 10 years ago.
Wow.
When we found a perfect location on the shoreline for that store.
So yeah, you've been doing this a long time, and you must
love
it. Long
time. And that's the other thing that has been helpful is because I've been doing it all these years, I've been able to navigate. I couldn't imagine opening a store like within the past year or in the past 2 years and having to navigate all of these, you know, obstacles that have come up. Because if you're not going down one avenue, you're able to somehow find another avenue or another vendor or another rep to help you navigate this. It's been interesting.
Yeah. That was my next question. I was wondering, even though you've been doing this for a long time and you have these relationships and you've got different strategies to deal with the challenges, have you had some sleepless nights where you've wondered, you know, is it time to close?
No, it's not time to close. And yes, we've had plenty of sleepless nights. And thank goodness for my husband, because we're able to, you know, figure this out together. I mean, we've just used each other and, okay, this is Plan A isn't working. What can we do with Plan B? And I use my reps constantly for suggestions on what to do and where to go and what's next. If I can't get a sled from here, can I get it from there? If I can't get a science project. And now, for instance, speaking of my puzzle company, I always did puzzles to this one particular company from Germany. Well, I've opened my eyes to an all-women company that have fabulous puzzles. And I found an Italy company that has, you know, also wonderful products. So now I have a store full of other companies that I've never done business with. So this has been actually great. My stores are full, thank goodness. Let's see if they stay full during the holiday. They say it's even going to be tougher to get. Maybe with the ports being open 24 hours a day, that may change. But I have a feeling that the truckers aren't going to be there just because the ports are open. I don't think the trucks are going to be there to take stuff off the ports. So
you
it's still going to be a challenge.
You mentioned the holidays. So how are you gearing up? Are your customers, are they understanding what's going on? Do you feel like you'll be able to help them not get frustrated if maybe you don't have what they're looking for exactly?
Yes. So the customers are tuning into the news. You're definitely getting the message out. They're definitely shopping earlier. My stores are presently packed. We're hoping that they stay that way. The back rooms are ready to go. But there's always that last minute push from December 11th that I need my companies to ship now, and let's see if they could do it. I just don't know the answer to that. They've always been able to do it. I don't know if they'll do it. If they'll be able to do it this year.
You know, other challenges being a smaller retailer, Lori, obviously customer loyalty is important and you have that. When we think about, you know, the challenges in competition with big box retailers, the online market, what you need to have in stock and what your reps are telling you.
Right. So I don't have a lot of the big box products, as I concentrate on other products. Obviously, you have to have some big box things, but I mostly don't have the big box stuff. So it's not really, I don't see them as my competition because they don't have the same inventory that I have. So it's a whole different ball game with what mass market has and what a small business would have. I hand pick every single item in the store. And so my husband and I know every single item in store. We're able to teach every single game, point out specific things for a 9-month-old, a 10-month-old, a 30-year-old. It doesn't matter. And I don't think when you go to a big box store, you have that same experience of what would be appropriate for different ages. You know, they're just not skilled that way. It's not their focus. So I don't see them actually as my competition.
Well, Lori Hirschman, it's been a pleasure to hear from you, co-owner of Evans, Jordy's, and Jesse's Toy Shops in Connecticut. We're glad to hear that you're doing well. And I imagine with all that customer base that you have along the shore, that it's going to be a good holiday season for you.
Check in with me in a month or two and we'll chat again.
Thank you, Lori, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was so much fun.
This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. After the break, Connecticut Retail Merchants Association President Tim Phelan tells us what he's hearing from his members. And we want to hear from you, too. What has your shopping experience been like lately? You can join us, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. The FDA has recently approved Zepbound, a new medication for chronic weight management. Dr. Davita Umashankar, Hartford Healthcare's System Medical Director of Medical Weight Loss, tells us more.
Zepbound helps decrease hunger and increase satiety levels. Taking this medication for 72 weeks, people can see at the highest dosage approximately 48 pounds of weight loss. So definitely a powerful drug and another powerful tool that we have to utilize to help individuals who struggle with obesity.
For those ready to explore their medical weight loss options, Dr. Umashankar has advice on the first most important step.
I don't think anyone knows you better than your own primary care physician. So having that conversation whenever you feel ready is so important because these medications are quite powerful and do need to be monitored on a regular basis.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Hi, this is Colin McEnroe. You're listening to a podcast right now. You probably know that. But if you were listening on the air, you'd also know we're in the middle of a fun drive. And even though you're not listening on the air, you're listening to a podcast. That doesn't change the fact that we need your support. And one way that you can support this show that you maybe even love or at least like is to visit ctpublic.org/donate and make a donation today. Thanks for everything that you do already. We are very grateful.
This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. A global supply chain issue has led to shortages, but how is this crisis affecting Connecticut? 90% of food operators in the state say their costs have gone up, with nearly 80% facing staffing shortages. That's according to data from the Connecticut Restaurant Association and Eating Connecticut's new Be Kind to Restaurants campaign. Stanley at Three Brothers Diner in Danbury tells us, quote, he's running a marathon to make ends meet. We also heard from some listeners who tweeted about their experiences. Eileen writes, the half and half is never in stock, no matter what day of the week or time of day I shop. Send help. Ben tweeted, a company picked up my exercise machine for repair in April, and every time I check for status, they say they are still waiting for a part. And Matt writes, he's been fine, except for shoelaces. Didn't see that coming. What's been your shopping experience lately? We want to hear from you. 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us now on Zoom is Tim Phelan, president of the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim, a shortage on shoelaces, really?
Unmute myself. Sorry. Yes, a run on shoelaces is a first for me. I haven't heard that. So don't have a good response, unfortunately. For that, but we have heard, all products. So I guess shoelaces are a product. So it sort of makes sense.
So what are you hearing from your members?
Well, we're hearing a lot of what Lori just talked about, and kudos to her. She's doing a great job. She's a great example of an independent retailer who is, creative and trying to meet the needs of to keep her business running and to keep her customers, satisfied. And so. You know, we're hearing all those similar things, that there's delays in inventory coming in, that there are cost increases that are associated with that, and that there are challenges in finding employees all across the board, whether it's from the supply chain to the storefront to back office. So it's all sort of been a challenge.
You mentioned this challenge. So how long, Stanley, has this been? Since the pandemic, or have we reached a crescendo in the last few months?
Well, no, I would say that, the kind of break it into two different categories. The supply chain challenge has been building over some time. More and more consumers have been purchasing items via the web and having those items delivered to their store, to their storefronts. So that was really exacerbated with the pandemic. The more people that stayed home and worked from home, they looked around their house, they saw the things they wanted to get fixed, and they ordered it online. We know that because we know the orders have been increased over the last a year from this year versus last year. And so that bottleneck had been brewing for a little while, and the pandemic really sort of exasperated that. The labor shortage issue is also one that kind of came up during the tail end of the pandemic, and is now sort of again trying to overcome that. It's slowly but surely we seem to be, but that's still lagging a little bit behind as well. So some of these issues have been kind of kicking around for a little while, and some of them have really been exasperated during this period.
I wanted to bring in a voice from someone who's been who owns a small business in Preston. Scott, Preston, can you hear me from the Preston Market?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes. Scott Hunter, morning. Owner of Preston Market. Thanks for calling in. So tell us what you've been experiencing. You're a convenience store. Has it been hard to keep inventory?
Yeah, that's been a struggle all for about a year and a half now. We're seeing, typically we would see anywhere from 3 to 5% out of stocks in our weekly orders. And now, I mean, we've had it as high as 40% out of stock. Right now, things are getting a little bit better. We're running probably around 20 to 25% out of stocks on a weekly basis, which is unheard of. You know, to go from 3 to 5% to go to 25%, it makes things very difficult. I mean, customers come in, and I don't think consumers really have a grasp on how widespread this problem is. People are so used to getting exactly what they want, and we have to substitute. I mean, we can't always get the same brands. You know, it's a challenge, and not to mention the price increases that we experience on a weekly basis. We used to have maybe quarterly increases or semi-annual increases, and now we're seeing it every week. I had 21 items out of 109 with a price increase just yesterday.
Wow.
So it's quite a task to keep up.
Tell me about how you've been substituting. So if you're usually expecting deliveries and you're not getting the product that you normally have, so what does that mean? Where do you go?
Well, we go to the Walmart. It's crazy as that sounds. I've been making weekly trips to Walmart to fill in what I can't get from my normal convenience store distribution channels. And it's also an eye-opener because we're starting to see that the pricing is a huge difference from the convenience store delivery channels to just walking to Walmart and buying stuff. I'm not sure if these distributors, they're compensating as well for their shortages and passing on to us, but the price changes are quite significant.
Can you give milk?
I can throw you an example right now.
Yes.
Just yesterday we got in milk. We paid $4.50. So that's our wholesale cost is $4.50 for 1 gallon of milk. And they're selling the same, Walmart is selling a gallon of milk for $2.63 out the door. So it becomes harder and harder for us to compete. I mean, granted we're a convenience store and things cost more, but when a customer, your neighbor walks in, needs a gallon of milk, and you're charging them almost $5 a gallon where they could get it for almost half that. So, at a certain point, people aren't willing to pay for that convenience. And I feel terrible trying to charge $5 for a gallon of milk, but it's we probably should be charging $6 to cover our true cost. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's insane.
It does sound pretty stressful. What have you been hearing for your customers? I mean, again, tell us a little bit more about Preston Market and your role in the community.
So we're a pretty diverse store. We're in Preston, Connecticut. The population's around 5,000 people, so not a big town. We're near Foxwoods Casino. We draw a lot of our business comes from casino employees and patrons of the casino. So, of course, there's less people going to the casino. There's less people working at the casino. So our customer count is down. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. We do have a postal counter in the store. Again, we're very diverse. But postal prices are going up too.
Stay with us. I want to get Tim Phelan to respond from the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Hearing Scott share that anecdote that he's not able to get what he normally orders, and so he's going to Walmart to fill his shelves. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I tip my cap to Scott and Lori for hanging in there. It's not easy to be an independent retailer. It's never been, and now it's even more challenging to do it. There's just so much pressure, and it's not just small independents. There are regional retailers, or even in Connecticut, retailers that have multiple locations that are just understaffed, and prices are going up, and they have to deal with that with customers. It's just a real challenge. And I would always say, with respect to the supply chain challenges, our national organization that we work with, the National Retail Federation, was part of a meeting at the White House just the other day that talked about ways that they could try to break this logjam, and a bunch of little things they did could add up to some changes, and hopefully those changes will help retailers like Scott and Lori to get supplies they need faster and keep costs down, and they can continue to operate their business. And the other thing that has to happen too is, the surrounding businesses, like Scott mentioned, the casinos, they need to get fully staffed again, bring people back. People need to get back to work in those places, because that's important part of retail is the surrounding economy. It's not just running their own business. It's making sure that the rest of the economy is up and running as well, because that's where the consumer comes, and that's where the consumer gets their disposable income to go in and shop. So, there's no silver bullet that I have that can fix this other than just try to keep pushing it forward and try to get some fixes in the supply chain if we can, and in other areas.
What about when we think about small businesses like Scott's Convenience Store and others? We've heard a lot about over the last year and a half local restaurants having to close. But in terms of smaller shops and stores, what can you do on the short term to help them?
Well, I mean, they've done a remarkable job. All of these small businesses, from small independent retailers to small independent restaurants, food stores, throughout this pandemic, in creating a different business model, in some cases completely, to deal with all the stuff that they had to deal with, from, you know, closing stores, the doors closed, the doors being open, to meeting customers where they are in terms of getting what it is that they're selling to the customer. So all we can do and what we try to do is continue to promote the importance of a strong retail economy to policymakers in Connecticut, to let legislators and the governor's office know that, you know, the decisions that they make have a direct impact on these businesses. So things like working with the governor's office to make sure that the safe store guidelines that were in place were reasonable for retailers to work with, and to, you know, talk about ways that, you know, we could ease some restrictions to get consumers back into stores in a safe manner, and with legislature working on ways that can continue to try to lower business costs so that they can continue to try to make a profit and try to make be competitive in this environment. But really, the champions in all of this are the independent retailers themselves, who have made the shifting. I mean, what Lori talked about earlier and what she's had to do, her and her husband have had to do to keep her three stores up and running, is just remarkable. And it's, and I've seen that across the board in with small retail stores, that they have made changes in their business model on the dime, in a minute's notice, just like that. They've had a shift during this, and they've done a remarkable job. So we should continue to applaud them, and we at the association will do everything we can to continue to support them.
Scott Hunter is still with us, owner of Preston Market. Scott, what do you need from your lawmakers or even your community to help you?
What do we need? Ooh, from a lawmaker? Boy, that's a good question.
Probably need them to stay out of the way, right, Scott?
Probably, I don't know. Probably stop adding taxes. I don't know. Every time I think about you, when you go buy a pint of Ben and Jerry's, and I bet most people listening don't even realize that there's a 7.35% tax on that. That doesn't really help a retailer. That's a big tax. When the government is making more money percentage-wise on items than the retailer, I think there's a problem. We sell tobacco. I mean, you know, take it or leave it. I mean, tobacco is a real thing. It's been around for a long time. So we sell tobacco. The taxes, the state of Connecticut and the federal government are making, I don't know, they're making like $6 a pack, and we're making 93 cents. Okay. And I'm the one paying the rent and paying the insurance and paying my help and paying this and paying that. And they make more money than I do. So for me, that's incredible. That's wrong. So the taxing isn't the way to solve the state's budget, to just keep taxing the consumer. That's not the way to go.
Scott, meanwhile, you've got some customer loyalty, I'm sure, in the town of Preston, and that must help as you continue to run your business and you see community members coming in?
Yeah, our customers are our friends. They're our friends and neighbors. Unfortunately, we've lost a lot of them because they lost their jobs. But they have a different job. They don't, come by the area. But, people got to work. You got to keep people working. And I don't know the answer. I don't. I really don't.
Well, Scott Hunter, we appreciate you taking your time to tell us what you've been experiencing, owner of Preston Market. Thanks, Scott, for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
And Tim Phelan was here from Connecticut's Retail Merchants Association. We'll see what the holidays bring, Tim.
Yeah, one thing I can tell you, Lucy's Christmas will be here, and the holidays will take place. And if you're a local Connecticut resident, listening in, support your local retailers, support the Scott Hunters and the Lori's from her stores. They need your support. Shop local. You'll be helping Connecticut's economy, and you'll be helping Connecticut's retailers.
That's Tim Phelan again from Connecticut's Retail Merchants Association. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, we're going to continue talking about the chain disruption and the larger factors at play. UConn finance professor Fred Carstensen will join us. Before we hear from him, today is the last day of our fall membership campaign. Have you supported Connecticut Public Radio yet? Here are two of my colleagues to tell you more. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We've been talking about shortages at retail stores, even supplies at restaurants running low because of problems in the global supply chain. For more, let's bring in an economist into the conversation. Joining us now on Zoom, Fred Carstensen, UConn finance professor and director at the Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis at UConn. Fred, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
So we know this is a deeply layered problem. So give us a sense of what's happening internationally, all the factors at play that we're starting to see in Connecticut.
Well, it is global. And of course, the first thing is COVID-19, and especially the Delta variant, which has resulted in, for instance, Vietnam has become a very important source of supply for a lot of components. And they've had dozens of factory shutdowns because of COVID outbreaks. They've had a very bad surge there, and that's affecting other countries as well. And in ports, there have been a real problem with staffing in the ports. And we're very, very dependent, of course, on this enormous international global supply chain, you know, with these big containers. And it's not just Los Angeles, Long Beach, which is where 40% of our imports come in. But in the UK, they have just enormous problems. They can't get the shipping containers out of the ports because of a shortage of truck drivers. And so it's not just the United States. It really is a global phenomenon. The second one is actually self-imposed. China is trying to improve its environmental impact, and President Xi cut the energy that was available to factories, so they burn less coal. So factories that had worked 6 days a week have had to cut to 4 days a week. India has wanted to become more self-sufficient. This is sort of nationalist policies. So they stopped importing coal, and now they have an energy shortage. So in Europe, the wind stopped blowing, and Europe is very, very dependent on green energy, on turbines. And the turbines didn't turn because the wind wasn't blowing. So they've ended up with an energy crisis. So it really has been kind of the perfect storm of everything that could go wrong in the chain is. And because over the last 50, 60 years, we've developed this just-in-time production technology, and you're bringing in components, you know, like the shoelaces. The shoelaces are coming from, you know, Bangladesh or something, and you have other components. Almost nobody is making things, quote unquote, locally. You're assembling things from literally all over the world, and so just one piece of that very complex chain breaking down is going to create problems. And what we've had is it breaking down for multiple reasons in multiple parts of the world. So it's going to take a while to sort this out, solve some of these problems, and find a different way of doing things. Lori, I think, was really wonderful on talking about, you know, she found this small Italian, you know, company that could provide the puzzles. I mean, it's a great learning experience, as she said, but companies are going, especially small companies, are going to learn to have much more diversified supply operations and be much more creative about how they respond to this. Mm-hmm. Oddly, the big box stores are much less capable of responding in this way because they got layers of bureaucracy and so on. And they also want very large volumes.
Right. A lot of small producers. Fred, I was going to mention, you mentioned shipping containers. When we think about how retailers get their inventory, the cost for shipping has increased. Getting space on these shipping containers, I understand, has quintupled in the last year. And so who's getting that space? Walmart and Amazon.
Yes, it's you're right, too, that and actually there's been a problem with supply of the containers themselves. We have enormous amount of imports coming in containers. We end up with a lot of empty containers, and you got to get those empty containers back to where the products are being packed. Well, that process is kind of broken down. So there's shortages of containers because the containers are in the wrong place. It's one of the things which is generally we've had a lot of this what we call spatial issues. A lot of the way the places the economy has been recovering is not the places where people live who don't have jobs. So there is a spatial mismatch. There's a skills mismatch. And that was true before this other kind of breakdown. So we've been sort of piling up problems progressively. And they've all sort of come together in the last month or so. And
can I think, Fred, can you talk about the consumer role in this? So obviously consumer demand is high, and when they hear that there are shortages, all of a sudden panic buying starts up, or let's get shopping right now. And so talk about how this can exacerbate what we're already experiencing.
Oh yeah, no, there's no question that people panic. And if they see something that's in short supply, they immediately, you know, buy 6 months of what they might need. And we knew this early on, more than a year and a half ago when the shutdowns first came, is, you know, all the toilet paper disappeared, all the paper products disappeared. We all remember going through, you know, our supermarkets and having huge gaps on the shelves because people were going in and buying huge quantities. Because when you face this kind of problem, you don't know when the supply is going to be restored. And so the irony is that when a problem like this emerges, the way people respond makes the problem worse because we put even more pressure on the supply chain. You know, we say, oh, we got to have more of this. And so there's no question that that's also happened. We've had a very significant surge in demand. And that was a process that had been building up anyway. And we already had problems with staffing. We already had problems with, shortages of workers, whether it's in the stores themselves or in restaurants or in fulfillment centers or truck drivers. We just were very ill prepared. And again, this is not a national American issue. This is a global issue. Almost every country is struggling with how to respond to this complex set of public health issues, of economic issues, and so on.
I'm glad you brought up the worker shortages. We know with when COVID was really bad, with outbreaks, also power outages, forcing people out of work, but also thinking about staffing shortages in response to poor working conditions.
Absolutely. Well, in fact, we have an unusual amount of strikes nationally. John Deere out in the Midwest has a big strike. We've actually had seen for the first time in many years a significant uptick in support for unions because workers have, you know, come to a realization of how bad the working conditions are and how, you know, a whole issue about because we are unique in virtually an entire world that we put so much of our fringe benefits, particularly healthcare, on employment. And instead of other countries, it's a public commitment and you don't run it through your employers. So you have access to healthcare whether or not you're employed. And because our system is also so extraordinarily expensive, companies have been systematically cutting back. And workers are enormously frustrated with how much of the costs have been shifted onto them. So we've got serious policy problems that transcend the short-term phenomenon. And we've only got a couple of minutes left. And Tim had pointed out something, and it's your listeners need to understand that for Connecticut, The challenges we face transcend this short-term phenomenon. Tim talked about how important it was to get the casinos back working, to get people back employed, to restore household income. So it's not just a short-term issue or issue related to this. But the sad reality is that Connecticut has a very, very poorly performing economy. We never recovered from the Great Recession, either in employment, but we had the worst performing state economy in the nation. We never recovered in terms of real output, well, state gross product, state gross domestic product is the equivalent, GDP. And we have, our jobs have not recovered. Worse than the jobs in Connecticut, people who live in Connecticut but work outside of Connecticut lost a phenomenal number of jobs in the last 4 months. And so household income in Connecticut is down very significantly. And that ultimately is what drives retail demand, as Tim emphasized. And right now it doesn't look like Connecticut has a path to recovery, not just coming out of this Great Recession, but also sort of more broadly. We're facing really very, very significant challenges over and above these short-term supply line disruptions.
I'm glad that you brought that up, that picture that is in, that's been Connecticut's reality for some time. We're hoping to have Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont back on the show soon, and we'll be sure to bring up some of the points that you've raised. Fred Carstensen, thank you for your time and the context you provided our listeners. He's a UConn finance professor and director at the Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis at UConn. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today's show produced by Katie Pellico. Our technical producer is Kat Pastor. Today is the final day of Connecticut Public Radio's fall membership drive. We hit on so many different topics on this show. We talked to Connecticut residents about the issues that matter to them. So support these conversations with a pledge. Here are two of my colleagues to tell you more.